Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk with the Docs Wellness Briefs, a podcast offering a quick dose of healthcare information on a wide range of topics in about 10 minutes. I'm Jennifer Semenza, and I'm here with Dr. Seth Workentin, addiction med specialist from Providence, Alaska, to talk about alcohol use disorder. Our goal today is to gain a better understanding of alcohol use disorder, learn how alcohol affects your body when you consume it in excess or over a long period of time, and why it matters to your health. So let's get started. Hi, Dr. Workentin.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
So let's start off with an easy question. What is alcohol use disorder?
Great question. When we diagnose it, we go through actually a pretty rigorous process. And there is 11 different criteria to meet this use disorder. It boils down into simplistic terms. I usually use the sentence, use despite consequences. And so there are negative things that happen because of alcohol use, and the person has lost the ability to control their use and will continue to use despite these consequences. So we also, another way to think about it is the three C's. So control, if there's a loss of control of drinking, if there's consequences, and because of the loss of control, continued use. And then also this part of cravings. And that comes into play on how more long-term use affects our brains. And it includes things like craving or thinking about alcohol more than you would like. It also includes tolerance, not getting the same effect and needing more to get a similar effect. And then withdrawal. We all know about that one. And when we talk about alcohol use disorder, we know now that there is actual structural changes that happen in the brain. We believe that they're probably a little precursor of just like some people are born with certain genes, and then they're exposed to things in their life that might prime them to be more at risk of developing an alcohol use disorder. But once that alcohol use disorder has established, the brain actually changes how it's connected and wired together. And in a simpler explanation I describe to people is that there's this part of our brain called the limbic system. And that part of our brain is to help reward us for doing things that are needed for our survival. So it makes us feel good when we have a really good meal. It makes us feel good when we watch the sunset, when we sit in front of a campfire and warm ourselves and take shelter in the rain. All of these things, that's the part of the brain that is making us feel good during those times. Sometimes that part of the brain gets confused and it thinks substances like alcohol are required for survival, just like shelter or warmth or sleep. And so it rewards us just the same for that. And so that's part of that structural change that happens and gets rewired. The great news is that it can be unwired. It can recover from that. It does take time and it takes a lot of support and treatment, but it can happen.
That's great. So how does moderate drinking look in comparison to excessive drinking? And what are the different types of excessive drinking? I know we've heard of a few.
Yeah. So moderate drinking, CDC has these little cutoffs. So less than two or less drinks a day for men, one to two drinks a day for women. That is what they recommend as kind of like the safe drinking amount. With the knowledge that there's been so many studies that have out there about if any amount of alcohol is safe for us, unfortunately, it seems like alcohol will do its thing and no amount is like super safe, but that is will keep you in a safer range. Heavy drinking is defined by the CDC as more than five drinks in an occasion for men, more than four drinks in an occasion for women. And yes, there are different types of heavy drinking, basically broken down into two main umbrellas. And we talk about what's called binge drinking and then more of the chronic drinking. Binge drinking pattern is more of a weekend of heavy drinking and then stop. And then more of the chronic is usually like everyday drinking. Both can be very hazardous and dangerous, both to the body, to the mental health, to our sleep, to all the things that keep us well and happy. but we tend to approach them differently in how we treat people. And different treatments are more effective depending on which type a person suffers from.
What kind of consequences does heavy and long-term drinking have on the brain?
Quite a few, very unfortunately. So heavy drinking, as the alcohol is broken down, it's broken down into compounds that are very toxic to our nervous system, both directly to the nerves themselves, but also to the blood supply that helps nourish our nerves and keep them healthy and bring out waste and provide nutrients. And so the nerves can become directly damaged from the alcohol itself. We usually find that as kind of a middle to later stage, but effects that people might have are poor concentration, worsening mood. More of the later stages, you can find actual nerve pain that happens, and that's a response from the nerve damage that has happened. And then further down the line, our brains can actually have direct damage that affects our ability to think. So it can cause cognitive impairment, sometimes as severe as people not being able to live independently, and they need extra help with daily activities.
So it sounds like it really doesn't affect everyone equally. Is there a potential for an additional impact of alcohol on individuals with conditions like anxiety or depression and mental health issues?
Yeah, it really doesn't affect everyone equally. That's not to say that the effects are at all good for people. That being said, I'm glad you mentioned mental health, because that often is something that people go to alcohol for. People who suffer from depression, anxiety, PTSD may find temporary relief in alcohol. It's very common. Whether it's helping with sleep or calming down some anxiety, we know it may help temporarily, but over the course of time, it actually tends to make all of those things worse. We know it's a depressant, and it will make depression worse. Anxiety, it may calm in the moment, but you get this rebound anxiety that's worse when you're off of it, and that drives the dependence. And then also for trauma, it can be used as a patch without really addressing and processing the underlying trauma. And that's important, hard, very difficult work to do, but it's necessary to live more of a full, independent, happy, and well life. So many people turn to alcohol to help with mental health issues. We have found over and over again in all of the evidence we have that it usually makes these things worse.
So let's talk a little bit more on the extreme side. Tell us a little bit more about alcohol poisoning.
Yeah, it is kind of the acute result of all of these toxic compounds that alcohol is broken down into. It's the buildup of those. And that someone's risk of developing alcohol poisoning can be affected by a lot of different things. Usually it is just a period of increased more than your average intake over a certain amount of time. And I haven't found a good average. I can't tell you the days or the weeks that it takes to get there. It's different for everyone. But what happens with alcohol poisoning is these toxic metabolites build up, and they cause such a disruption in the normal functioning of our body that you get really, really sick. So it can slow down your gut. It can cause blood vessel changes in the ways that slow down blood flow, affect our hearts. It can cause things like shock, which is where your blood pressure is super low. It can cause bleeding into our stomachs or our intestines. And it can cause liver injury to the point where it's very severe and you need to be in the hospital for. Alcohol poisoning, thankfully and not thankfully, is not very subtle. You will be very, very sick, and it will be clear that a hospital is needed. And I'd urge anyone that gets to the point where they're not able to keep any food down because they're throwing up, they're not able to get out of bed because they feel so terrible, please go to the hospital. We have great ways to treat you.
What are the biggest health risks associated with alcohol use disorder? I know you've listed quite a few, but if we were to list the top ones, what would people be most concerned about?
There are so many. The big ones where we talk about liver injury and failure to the point of cirrhosis. Alcohol is now the leading cause of cirrhosis, which is complete liver failure, and where you think about having liver transplants. That is the one that is all kind of on our mind. There are many others. So there's cognitive impairments and brain damage that can happen with it. There are intestinal and stomach issues, such as bleeding into your stomach, as well as slowing down your gut and making it really uncomfortable to eat and lowering your appetite. But the most dangerous ones, I often make sure my patients know about, it can increase risks. It does increase risks of cancer and of early death. Oftentimes, those aren't the concern for most people. Most people live life day to day and making sure that they're able to cope with their current life today. And so what I really try and aim my therapy towards is how alcohol is affecting your life today and how it can be improved today without it. And usually those are things like alcohol reduces our ability to get good restful sleep, and it always worsens our mood. There's this saying I heard in AA meeting that there's nothing so bad that alcohol can't make worse. And unfortunately, I found that to ring quite true, especially when we're talking about mood and your ability to handle life stressors in that day.
That's a great quote. So what are some good first steps someone should take if they suspect that they or a loved one might have a drinking problem?
If you're concerned for yourself, you've already made a big first step. And that's kind of like that introspective, reevaluating alcohol's role in your life. Is it good for you? Is it doing more good than bad? And usually the answer is not quite. So you've already made a big step, and that is huge. The next step after that is reaching out. The opposite of addiction is connection. Reach out to loved ones, see what they think. And you can get that support if you have a good support structure in your life. If you don't, there are people, professionals, that can be that support structure for you. You can go onto alcoholicanonymous.com. They have meetings everywhere in the country. They also have virtual meetings, especially here in the state of Alaska. Not everyone lives in a place that can attend a meeting in person, so they have virtual options. That can be a first, easy to go to, low barrier way. The next one is reaching out to your doctor. There are great specialists that do this. They help treat people, and they have really good medications and therapies that can help you along. No matter where you are on the spectrum of like, I'm not ready to change yet, or I need to change yesterday, and how can I do that? We are well-trained to meet you where you're at. And if you're in the role of a loved one, that can be a very challenging place to be. First thing to do, I would say, is express your concern to your loved one in a very compassionate way. Oftentimes, it's very hard for us to evaluate ourselves and our behaviors. It's much easier for us to evaluate someone else's. So they may not recognize the things that you see alcohol affecting in their life. So you voicing that to them can be a huge help. If it's not received right away, it's just planting a seed. And sometimes that seed will grow into a good, full, healthy tree someday. But help encourage them in their track and express your concern and encourage and support as they go along.
I imagine that the fear of judgment keeps many people from seeking help. So what are things we can do to reduce the stigma on addiction and on alcohol use disorder?
That is a great question that we all wrestle with every day. Reducing the stigma usually starts with talking about it, and talking about it frankly, but compassionately, and trying to be objective about it. There's so much weight behind all of this. There's so much stigma. There's so much political weight behind all of this. But if we approach it more of a compassionate area and understanding that this alcohol use disorder is a chronic disease, the brain actually changes. And there are ways to treat chronic diseases, just like alcohol use disorder. And if we approach it from that point, instead of a moral failing as somebody actively choosing every day, which is flawed, we can start talking about the same language and start from the same square one when we go forward in how we can help people who need the support.
This has been a really great conversation, Dr. Workentine. Thanks so much for joining us on Talk with a Doc's Wellness Brief. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you so much. And my heart goes out to all of the listeners who either suffer from, know someone who suffers from any of these things. There is plenty of support and resources out there. Please reach out. We're happy to help.
To get continued information on other important healthcare topics, please subscribe to Talk with a Doc on your favorite podcast platform, and make sure to listen to all of our shows on Lit Live Radio under Future of Health or your favorite podcast platform. You can follow us on social media. We can be found on X and Facebook at Providence and Instagram under Providence Health System. To learn more about our mission, programs, and services, go to providence.org. And please remember, the information provided during this program is for educational purposes only. You should always consult your healthcare provider if you have any questions regarding a medical condition or treatment. At Providence, we see the life in you.